Hi, NW2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the cast and director of Macbeth at Shakespeare Theater Company from April 25th through May 28th. Guys, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jesse J. Perez, and I'm playing Macbeth.
Hi, I'm Nicole Salter. I'm playing Lady Macbeth.
Hi, I'm Liesl Tommy, and I'm playing the director.
Awesome. So we have the people you're going to see on stage and the people that are running the show behind the stage. This is going to be great. But wait, did we already commit the cardinal sin? Aren't you supposed to not say the name of it or what?
There is a long-standing belief that you're going to curse yourself in your show if you say the name of the play Macbeth in the theater. But we're not in the theater now, so we're safe.
So it doesn't apply to the radio station.
Does not apply to this structure.
I didn't want a lightning bolt or something while we're in here. All right, cool. So this is a safe space. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Do you honor the tradition while you're at?
No, not while we're at the theater. It would just be too fatiguing. Because the ritual is, if you say it, you guys want to, Jesse, you want to tell us what has to happen?
I think you have to go outside and go around the theater like 5 times and then knock on the door and somebody's got to answer the door and let you back in.
Yeah.
And there's a whole ritual. I think there's a couple of other steps that other theaters do, but there, you get a free pass that when you're actually performing the play, that's the only time you're allowed to say it in the theater you're performing it. When you're performing it and rehearsing it. And so then you get the free pass to actually say the word. Because you have to.
I want to go into the play, but how did this even start? I've always wondered. Do you know how that superstition even started?
I don't know, but I do know that when I was a young actor and I would say it in the theaters, the older actors would always send me out. And I thought it was a joke, like, you cannot be serious.
Like hazing or something?
Yeah, but no, they were truly dead serious, and because they had all been in productions of Macbeth that had gone horribly wrong. So they believed it.
I had the experience just a couple years ago in Berkeley not doing a Shakespeare show at all. I mentioned the name, I don't know why, and everyone in the dressing room turned and looked at me and they said, "Get out."
Yeah.
I had to go outside. I had to go around the theater. I had to turn around. I had to knock on the door. Someone had to let me back in.
Wow. Well, it adds to the aura and the mystery.
Yeah, you know, there's so much, kind of the language of Macbeth is full of foreboding. It's full of dire prophecies that it just is part of the lore. It's kind of cool.
I think it adds a little layer to it.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's say someone's been living under a rock and hasn't read. I mean, we all read it like, what, middle school probably, high school? But just give them the brief, synopsis from the prophecy on and, the Scottish general, all that stuff.
Jesse, you do it.
Okay. It's about this guy who's married to this wonderful woman and they're madly in love.
Wonderful woman.
And he's a soldier and he's fighting in this war and he's a great soldier at that. And so as he's out there on the heath after this great war that they thought they were going to lose, along come these three people and whisper something in his ear and say that he's going to be a Thane of Cawdor and then be king. He also says some stuff to his friend, but he really doesn't care about that because the ambition is sparked and it's something that he's discussed with his wife. And so this little half-truth, he decides to make a full-truth. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And with his wife's support, they decide to go on a bloody trail to get to the top.
We've seen that in a lot of things.
Yes, we have.
Actually, funny you mentioned it. I want to talk to Lady Macbeth here. We actually, what was it? Oh, when House of Cards did their premiere here in D.C. At the museum, Robin Wright actually told me that she patterned it after Lady Macbeth. And,
makes sense.
A lot of the backstabbing and, we could talk about Game of Thrones. We could talk about a lot of things.
Right.
Explain why this is even so relevant and how these characters keep popping up and manifesting in even new pop culture today.
New pop culture and new actual culture.
I like the distinction.
I think that they're the themes that exist in Shakespeare's works, this work especially because I'm in it, but in all of them, they resonate so much with our present day life because they're really about the human condition and humanity. So, when we're looking at a play like Macbeth, which is the making of a tyrant, I think we spend a lot of time, particularly in this town, looking at people who we think are tyrants, but we never look at how they become that way. No one starts that way. Where does that ambition begin? What kind of mind frame are they in that allows them to pursue that path and to what end? I think that those are things on various levels that we're all a part of. That's a continuum we're all a part of. You have it and I have it. Yeah. We just have it to a different extent and perhaps in a different direction.
Hopefully healthier level.
Right, right.
Hopefully, but not always, you know. And the ways in which we rationalize and justify our behavior to assuage our own pain, our own inadequacies, our own lusts. Yeah.
What do you like about playing the Lady Macbeth part?
I like that it's so complex. I think that people always assume that she's, you know, the Eve to the Adam of life. And I don't think that at all. I think that if you look at the given circumstances that Shakespeare has actually given to you, she's a woman in an immense amount of pain, the loss of a child, and what that does to a marriage, and what that does during a time of war. And if you're in a society that values womanhood by your capacity to bear children, and you can't, and the one that you had died, how that messes with your mind.
Yeah.
And messes with your desire to see your husband, to give your husband something equivalent to the family that you can't give him.
Wow. Yeah. Let's talk to Miss Director over here. You don't need to say Shakespeare's a genius. We all know that. But compare this to maybe some of his other works. I mean, you've grappled with this text over and over again in rehearsals and everything. I mean, we all know Out, Damn Spot, and all stuff like that. But what in this one about the prose itself jumps out to you the more you read it?
Well, you know, the thing that when I was doing the pre-production text analysis and trying to put together what my take on this would be, because when you direct a classic, you know, you have to do two things. You have to do rigorous text analysis, and then you have to figure out where you as a director enter into the story, what you have to contribute. And one of the things that really leapt out at me was how much grief was central to this play.
Loss of a child.
And then there's so many lines in the play that involve people lamenting for their country. So, oh, Scotland, oh, my poor country, oh, bleed Scotland, bleed country, that kind of thing, over and over again. And it felt very immediate because it was a play, it's a play about, you know, a country divided. And that felt extremely relevant to today. So that sort of became my, you know, my jumping off point was, you know, the repetition of the of this lament for our country. And then, of course, you just the as a person in the entertainment business, we all grapple with ambition. Mm-hmm. And we all grapple with conducting ourselves with integrity in this field. So it felt very alive to me, the struggle that Macbeth goes through, because he doesn't leap into this decision quickly. He has so many moments where it's a really deep and complex and emotional struggle, which is of course why I cast Jesse J. Perez, because he is a deep and complex person. He's a badass, but he has a great deal of sensitivity, and that, you know, that is always when you can humanize an element like ambition and really unpack it, which is what Shakespeare has done. That is something that will be eternally interesting to audiences, because that's something that no matter what country you are from, no matter where you're from, you have seen or yourself struggled with ambition.
Absolutely. Make her blush a little bit. What's so great working with her as a director?
Oh, man. You know, I've known...
Well, she just called you a badass. Yeah. You need to return service.
I've known Lisa for a long time, and I remember when we first were out of school, we got to work together, and we basically rehearsed in a closet. And we had a two-week rehearsal period to put up a new play. It was
no wire hanger.
Yeah, summer play festival. And literally, in this closet, I realized that I was in the midst of an artist that had great ideas and wanted to bring to the forefront contemporary storytelling. And in a way, I was like, oh man, I want to work with this woman for the rest of my life. And of course, life drew us in separate directions, but we've always kept tabs on each other, because that's how it is when you meet a good artist in the field and you're like, when is it going to come back around? And I hope it is soon. And hopefully I can work with her as a company member.
Right.
So that way we can develop this shorthand and trust each other in a room where it's safe, and yet we can do the most dangerous work possible.
I love it. How about for you? What have you enjoyed working?
I've enjoyed working with Liesl because she's so rigorous. I feel like so many people that I've worked with in the past have been pretty good about clarity, directing for clarity of story, but they don't have like a take. They don't have an artistic voice as well.
Okay, yeah.
So working with someone who actually has a vision and makes it incredibly comfortable for you to trust that your contributions are being guided into a cohesive whole that's going to be badass.
That's word now.
Yeah. And not just like clear.
Right.
You know, that's actually going to be an evening of theater where there is an experience at hand, not just an understanding of the English that's being spoken.
Right. It's not just relaying what's on the page.
Exactly.
It's you come with it with your own sort of vision and angle on it. And you
completely.
Have
it's just a different experience working with someone who is also practicing in their artistic expression while guiding you in your shaping of an arc as well. Like, just to have everybody in an artistic space.
Awesome.
That's wonderful.
I want to, let's drill down, because I geek out on that stuff. Right. Forgive me, listeners, if this is getting too heady. But drill into that actor, director, character arc work that you guys are talking about. I mean, I know, I don't want to just distill it into, like, you know, just ambition and just grief, you know.
Right.
But what in terms, you know, we're always talking about, like, character needs and wants. Like, what when you guys work with them, like, what do you say, like, Macbeth's need is? Like, what fuels his ambition?
Well, you know, it's something that I say to the cast all the time, and when I teach, I say all the time is when you see really exciting theater, you're watching change happen, right? So, and this is the same whether it's a musical or whether it's Shakespeare or whether it's a new play, you're tracking an arc. You're tracking the play's storytelling, and there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and hopefully there's change. Who the play is at the beginning and who the play is at the end is completely different, and that's the fun part, is tracking change.
If nothing changes, what's the point?
Correct. And the same thing with the characters, and the same thing with an act, and the same thing with a scene, and the same thing with a monologue, the same thing with a song. You're tracking change. That is what makes you lean forward in your seat, and that is what is exciting. Because we in our lives are always at a crossroads. You know, whether you work as a secretary, whether you work as an accountant, whether you work as an actor, things happen in your life and you have to make choices and you have to go with your gut and hope for the best. So we all connect universally to watching people grapple with change. And that's, you know, that's how I break it down when I'm talking to actors working on a scene. Who are you at the beginning of this scene, and who are you at the end, and where are the moments in the scene where change happens? That's my work, and then I have to work with the actors to kind of tease it out of the scene and out of the way they're thinking about the character. And that's why it always feels alive and always feels engaging, because it's active.
Right. And every little moment has to have its
exactly.
own, to lesser levels, but you know, every little moment has a choice, and you change because of that, and then you got to work off of that.
Exactly, because it's a ripple effect. So you make a choice here, and that changes you. It changes your the person in the scene with you, changes a marriage, it changes a parent child relationship, and then you have to continue to grapple. And that is essentially the human existence. When people are miserable is when they feel like they're caught in a rut, when they feel like there's no dynamism to their life. You know, and you don't have to be a movie star to have dynamism in your life. Right. You know what I mean? You can be a regular person living in a regular apartment with a regular family, and you're still grappling with change.
Absolutely. You hear that, young directors out there? Don't overthink it. It's simple as that. Like, find the moments of change and
traumatize them.
That's great. What are those moments of change through? I mean, we're talking about little minuscule ones scene to scene, but like, let's look maybe macro throughout for you. What are those like little pivot points?
On the way over here, we were in the car and we were talking about act five, you know, because that's where we're at and we're grappling with that act. And we're like, where the hell is Macbeth here now? And it's the whole play has beautiful poetry, dark and menacing, and then you get to the end, and he seems like a wiser man. His poetry starts talking about the yellow leaf of life and where he's at, and then he starts wondering what it is to have death be delivered to him by someone, a messenger, and someone he loves when his wife has killed herself. and where he goes to. And it's not an emotional, flood. He speaks and he says what's happening in his thoughts. So how do you fight that emotional gauge to let it all go and completely fall apart on stage and focus it to make words to explain not only for yourself, but to the people that are listening to the story to come along with you and let him know where he's at. And that takes wisdom to do that in Act Five and be a person that has lived to come at, for somebody to come at you and be like, hey, your wife is dead. What do you do? And, it's a fact of life. It happens. But then to put it into some of the most beautiful poetry ever written and place it out there in a way that floats and it's not too emotional that they don't understand it. But I don't know. I'm grappling with it as we speak, so I don't know how to do that quite yet. Sure. And that's why I'm working with Liesl Tommy.
That's why we're here talking it out, baby.
right. But yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on your character, Lady Macbeth's, her major, what were we saying, pivot points of change? Yeah.
Well, her major pivot points of change. I mean, her journey to me does seem to happen so quickly, but so deeply. I think getting the initial idea to pursue the ambition beyond the theoretical is a huge shift. That provides her life with that fire and that dynamism that was lacking before that. I mean, she talks in the play about her ignorant present, just the vapidness of her existence until that moment when she has something to aspire to. And then the descent into the realizations that lead to her utter hopelessness. Mm. Just meeting all of those points as well.
Awesome. You guys kind of alluded to it earlier when we were talking about, its relevance today, but why is performing this in Washington? I mean, this is the ultimate town of ambition and, correct, backstabbing and that kind of stuff. So why is it? I don't know who wants to take that one, but.
Well, when I came up with, with the take, with the concept, the C word, it was definitely influenced by the fact that I was going to be doing it in Washington, D.C. I definitely feel like that it's a political town, that the audience is sophisticated in the manner that it is sophisticated. I could bring a certain kind of political and international worldview into the play and they'd get it. So maybe I wouldn't do this particular take if I were doing the play elsewhere, but I feel like this is quite an informed audience in terms of the intricacies of politics and, international warfare.
Gotcha. What do we see visually? We've talked a lot about the themes and characters and arcs, but I mean, if our listeners hear this and show up, what are we seeing? Is it when it was written, what, like 16 something?
Yeah.
But is it contemporary or is it set back?
Yeah. No, it's contemporary. I call it it's placed in the future present.
Okay.
Is how I describe it. And because it's sort of, it has this now and forever feel to it. And it takes place in North Africa. Libya was a very, very important visual reference for us in terms of the research for the for clothing and for the design. And, I'm originally from South Africa, so my point of view, my politics were shaped in a certain way, So when I was doing the interrogation of the script, I thought the first question is, after you struggle with ambition and Macbeth and Lady Macbeth and that marriage, the next is, who are the witches in the future present? In our world today, who gains from whispering into the ear of an ambitious general that they should kill the king or the president or the prime minister? And it was because I kind of came up with this idea about who the witches were in the present.
Are you allowed to share that with me?
I am. I will. the witches. So if we're placing this in North Africa, in an oil-rich region of the continent, people who want to influence and control the leadership of that continent are usually Western interests.
Right.
They want a puppet leader that they can control so they have access to resources.
Down goes Gaddafi. Up comes
who?
Whatever we want to prop up.
Yes, exactly. Right. You know, and that's so that is that became the structure of our production of Macbeth.
It's fascinating to me that that's, and coming from where you come from, you know, that's, you probably, may, other people would have taken a totally different take, but that's what I love when different people grapple with different texts is, we're going to see this through that prism, and it's, that's so cool to me.
Thank you. I mean, I this is to me why it's so incredibly important that there is diversity in the role of the director, because there are so many different kinds of points of view out there. You know, there's a lot of Shakespeare and classical texts directed by white men. And, you know, there's a lot of us out here who have a lot of different kinds of things to say about the, the stories.
That are equally, if not more, badass.
Nice. I think all four of us have used it now.
You want to get in on this? People in the back. Tell me a little bit about yourself. So, you—I mean, you said you know you said you were born in South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you? I want to get to you guys. So get ready on your little mini bio. But you know, just take your general, you know, the abbreviated version
on your rise
and how you fell for theater in the first place.
You know, grew up in South Africa during the apartheid era, and then my family immigrated to the States, to Boston, when I was in high school, and that's where I discovered theater. And it was a very difficult transition coming from, you know, the society that was South Africa then to, you know, American high school, I guess. And then a teacher, Mrs. Inez Dover, asked me to be in a play, and that play was for Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. And it was completely life-changing. And I instantly found community. I instantly found like-minded people. And I never looked back. I always knew from that moment that this is the only thing I wanted to do, much to the stress and chagrin of my immigrant parents. Like, we did not sacrifice everything for you to come here and be a what?
It's so funny.
Actor? What even is that?
Literally yesterday we interviewed a comedian from Iran, Maz Jabrani. He said the same thing.
Yeah.
It's an immigrant parent thing to say. Like, we fled a revolution to get here. You're being a doctor or
That's
a lawyer.
Right. Literally a doctor or a lawyer. And then there was the point where they're like, well, she can't do trigonometry, so I guess it's a lawyer, you know.
So this was the high school play in Boston. How'd you then? What was like the next step? Did you go to college and study?
I went to England and I studied classical theater there. Chekhov, Shakespeare, Ibsen, and you know, I just fell in love with language and I fell in love with epic storytelling because it felt very close to me. You know, epic, the Greeks as well. Again, coming from the society that I come from, these enormous issues that people were grappling with in these plays felt very normal to me, you know. And then I worked as an actor, came back to the States, and then I went to Trinity Rep in Rhode Island did my graduate work there and then moved to New York. And shortly after I was in New York for a few years, I realized that as an actor, you don't have control of the content of the work. And because I grew up in such a political family, I just realized I had to have control over the stories.
Right.
And so I switched to directing. And my teachers in grad school had encouraged me to direct every year because they felt like that was going to be something I would end up doing. They knew before I did.
They could see it in you.
I guess they could.
That's awesome.
And then, you know, I started doing a lot of new plays, political new plays, as a director. And yeah, it's been, I never thought that I would actually make it happen. So it's still every single day I get on my knees and thank God that this is my life, that I'm not, you know, still waitressing or still struggling and not knowing if I'll actually be able to do it. It's a privilege to be able to do this work.
Well, man, that's it. Hey, there you go. You gotta love someone that's grateful and talented, right? All right, Macbeth, what's your story?
Well, I'm grateful. And I was born in Los Angeles in East LA, so I'm like the typical cliche. I'm Mexican-American, Chicano. But my parents moved to the City of Commerce, which is right outside East LA. And I grew up there. My parents moved because they wanted me to stay out of gangs. And so as a kid, I was I was just always into telling stories, you know, like I would be called up at school during to do a report, you know, an oral report, and I would do a whole play out of it. I would do a set and wear costumes and makeup and be the lion and the tiger, you know, and the whole.
And you would talk like that.
And I, yeah, and I would talk and do these voices. And so I knew something was wrong with me and I had to like focus it in. And so I knew I was going to perform. And believe it or not, I started dancing and joined this dance company that got some attention. And we started dancing for Disney.
Oh, nice.
And so I was with that for a little bit, and I knew I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. Like, I knew I wanted to tell stories, and as much as the body could tell stories, I wanted to speak and get some words out there, right? Because that's what stories are made of. Right. And so I turned to the director of the dance company, and I said, hey, I want to do what Charlie Chaplin does. And he was like, whoa. How do we do that? That's, you know, a silent clown that is telling stories with dance, kind of, but is telling stories in a different way, not just through dance. And so he...
So you started doing the dance.
Right, exactly. With the
eating shoestrings and spaghetti or what?
Yeah, no. So then he took me to the Sal Adler Conservatory of Acting West, and that's where I started my training as a young actor. And they were really tough on me, you know, the program there. It was really expensive, and my parents were like, what the hell are you doing with your life? And so then I looked for a public school that taught theater, and the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts did that. So I went there for 3 years, met amazing teachers, just started to further the craft, I guess, as a kid, which if I even knew what the hell that was. And then eventually I auditioned for a bunch of programs, and I got into Juilliard, moved to New York, never looked back. And I've been doing it since, you know, and it's been tough being Mexican American in this business. I've always thought of myself as an American actor till you graduate and then you start being stereotyped and being told to put a certain accent on things. And you're like, well, what did I train for then?
Right, right.
And it's interesting to do work like this, to do Shakespeare, because you go to a classical training program to do this type of work, and very seldom do you get the opportunity to actually do it. But then you get scared because nobody gives you that opportunity, and eventually somebody does, and you start working on it, and you realize, oh man, I can do this.
This is it. This
I can
is it.
Really do this, and I can sink my teeth into this like any other American, and dare I say, Brit can as well.
Wow. Man, I love hearing your guys' journeys. Who knew? Macbeth Chaplin. Stop it. All right, your turn.
My journey is a lot more cliche than yours. I am also from Los Angeles, California, and I was born and raised in an area of Los Angeles in Windsor Hills, View Park, Baldwin Hills, Ladera Heights area, where there's a lot of Black people and a lot of Black culture kind of concentrated. And there's a woman named Marla Gibbs, who you guys probably know from The Jeffersons, mm-hmm. Or 227. She was a pillar of our community, of our cultural community. And she thought that it was ridiculous that we as Black people lived in this city that contained Hollywood but weren't included. Right. So she created a training program in a school in the center of my community in View Park. And I went to that training program very early. But actually, that's not where I got the bug. Mm. I got the bug because my mom knew I was going to be tall and knew we didn't have any money and wanted me to go to college. So she started putting me in a bunch of sports stuff. So volleyball, gymnastics, basketball. And I sucked at every single one. And my mom is very athletic. My mother is very, she has a lot of masculine energy. So she just didn't understand because she thought it was the funnest thing in the world. Right. And I said, Mom, I don't want to go to softball anymore. And I lived in a household because the gangs were very rampant when I was growing up. Doing nothing was not an option. So she was like, either do what I tell you to do or you find something to do. Mm-hmm. And there's this woman named Danielle Spencer who played Raj's little sister on that show, What's Happening? I'm telling my age. She started a summer program at a Los Angeles Community College. And I told her, my mom, I wanted to do that. And she said, if I pay for this, I don't care if you don't like it in the middle. You're staying.
You're finishing.
And you're finishing.
You're seeing it through.
And I got in there and they did an adaptation of Cinderella, like Cinderella in the Hood or something like that. And they cast me as Cinderella. So that's when I got bit.
Yeah.
And I learned all the lines. Like everybody's lines, everybody's blocking, all the choreography. I could do the whole show by my damn self.
Wow. Just happened your fairy godmother was on What's Happening.
Right. Who knew, right? And so then she introduced me to the Marla Gibbs School, and I went to Marla Gibbs School. And then a woman by the name of Wendy Raquel Robinson, who is on the Steve Harvey Show and The Game, she was a part of the early faculty, and she started a school that was focused on musical theater, training triple threats. So I then went to her school in high school, and she's still a mentor and a very close friend today. So that's how I started. And I went to Howard University, D.C., mostly because of Wendy Raquel Robinson's influence on my life. I could have went to UCLA. I would have never left L.A. And then I went to NYU. I didn't even want to go to NYU. I wanted a master's degree because I thought it would be good to have something to fall back on. And I didn't want to go. I wanted to go back home. But something about the universe knew that I should be there. And I got in, and I asked Zelda Fitchandler if I could defer. I said, So can I defer for a year and come back? I just need time away from school. And she was like, you could reapply. Yeah. I said, I guess I'll see you in August. Yeah. And that training, I've kind of, the art has served me in different ways throughout the entire course of my life since I was 8 years old. Served my personal, spiritual, intellectual development my entire life. And now at this point in my career now as an actress and a playwright, I'm so thankful that I have that platform and that medium and that skill and that craft to participate in my society, because it's where I'm supposed to be.
All three of you guys are supposed to be here in this room working on this play. I love that all of your three journeys have crossed paths into this, because I can tell.
I didn't even know, Jesse.
This is going to be special.
It's meant to be. It does.
So if our listeners are hearing this, I always like to, at the end, to just, you know, boil it down. Why should they come out?
Well, if you like badass theater.
There it is.
No, if you want to see...
Starring Charlie Chaplin and a volleyball star.
That's right. Yes, when you talk about original concepts, that's true. No, if you want to see something really different, but anchored in incredibly beautiful language that feels like your life right now, then come and see this play. You're going to lean forward, and the performances are astounding. They're making me look really good.
Awesome. Again, guys, it's Macbeth at Shakespeare Theater Company, April 25th through May 28th. And you want to say Macbeth one more time before we leave the room? Because it's the safe space. So, I mean, just you want to get it out now. Macbeth! That I 3 years, I hear thee. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you so much.